Hello, hello, everyone. This is Crystal from the Spooky Barber Babes, and tonight I'm going to bring to you another classic Cartoon Network conspiracy theory. This one's going to be based off of the Ed, Edd n Eddy purgatory theory. So sit back, relax, and let's get started. So this theory is based kind of all over the place. It's said that the children of the cul-de-sac were reigning different eras spanning from the early 1900s to about the 2000s. It does explain why it's hard to pinpoint exactly when the show takes place, and kind of the way everyone acts in the show. Each one of them, you can kind of see the era that they came from. But it's actually said that they're experiencing, you know, being stuck in purgatory. So they don't really know what's going on. So deep diving into this, we're going to start with the oldest of the members that they're saying was like the first to arrive. And that was Rolf. They're saying that he actually comes from the 1900s. And it's basically stating that his family moved to Peach Creek and they established this farm. But in 1903, Rolf died when his family's farm animals stampeded and trampled him. Supposedly, this is the reason why he only has one cow, one goat, a few pigs, and a few chickens in the afterlife, is because, you know, most of them were running away and that's kind of all that was left. Next in on the purgatory train was Johnny 2x4. He came to Peach Creek before his death, and they're basically saying that he had no friends. That's why he grabbed a 2x4 and drew a face on it with a marker, and aka we have Plank. He did die in 1922 after fighting a battle of tuberculosis 6 years before the discovery of penicillin. Sadly, the last thing he saw was Plank, so therefore he took Plank into the afterlife with him. And it also kind of explains why Plank has like some kind of occasional sentient behavior. Apparently that's been said it was most notably in the movie. Next up came Eddie. And that he was actually born in New York during the Great Depression era. And he moved to Peach Creek. And in life, he was trying to always make a quick buck, you know, scam out all the kids in the cul-de-sac. And, you know, he didn't want to live in poverty. It stated that his father had abandoned him and his mother shortly after he was born. Then, you know, he had this big brother who he looked up to, despite the fact that his brother was really abusive. And I mean, you know, he's trying to make up for not having a dad. So, okay, big brother, you're the next one in. Sadly, one of his scams went awry and Eddie was chased by all the kids at the cul-de-sac who he had swindled money out of. In his way of trying to escape, he jumped into a lake, but because he couldn't swim, Eddie drowned in the lake. And seeing as, you know, yeah, he's moved on to the next life, he still carries on that, I have to make a get-rich-quick scheme, you know, gotta make money. So he's kind of kept that lifetime behavior in the afterlife. Ed and Sarah were the next to arrive. Sadly, their story's actually a little kind of twisted. Their father had died fighting in World War II, and as a result, their mother became very distant and very disconnected. And basically, that's why Sarah became the bossy kind of parental figure for Ed, is because she's trying to fill in the role that, you know, her father and mother had before, you know, the father passed and the mother became, you know, dissociative. Ed pretty much just shut the world out and delved into comic books and monster movies. Sadly, they both died in a freak car accident in 1953. Both their behaviors and their likes have kind of moved into the afterlife with them, hence why, you know, Ed seems to be like such this carefree, as they call him, the bumbling idiot. It's not that he's a bumbling idiot. He's just, he's still kind of reeling. Naz is up next. She was born in the 1960s era to hippie parents. And I mean, you can fully see that in the episode, in the episodes. She would attract, you know, the male children of the neighborhood. And in the summer of 1979, a serial killer escaped from a local asylum, made his way into her house, and raped and murdered her along with her entire family. I feel she's like the most gruesome of them all. It's really sad, truth be told. Double D is up next, and he was born in the 1970s. And basically what I've kind of gathered from this is I've seen two different versions of how he made it into the afterlife. One is that, you know, he had very strict controlling parents, which, I mean, you could see that from the episodes, like everything in his room's labeled. He's kind of neurotic. But his parents were very emotionally distant, and that they pushed him to succeed academically so much that it's believed he died of a gas leak caused by an explosion, well, causing an explosion that from a Bunsen burner chemistry set. That was theory number one that I had found of how he made it into purgatory. Theory number two is that he actually went forward and was studying for finals, and that he overdosed on Adderall. Next up, we have Kevin, and he was born sometime around the early 1980s. Born to a broken down home, very abusive father, poorly educated, mother passed away when he was about a year old. Because of the situation at home, Kevin would act out on all the other children in the cul-de-sac, hence why he became, you know, the bully. Moving forward, you know, he's obsessed with his bike. Like, you can't touch his bike, you can't look at his bike. One of the nights, this is right around, 1995, very interested in the X Games when they came out. Moving forward, like, 4 years. It was a winter night, 99, and sadly, his father fatally beat him into a fit of drunken rage, and he died while en route to the hospital. His father was convicted of murder, and he was sentenced to life in prison. Kevin entered the afterlife, where he reimagined his father as a loving kind of person that would shower him with gifts, but, still kept his bullying ways towards all the other children still. I mean, and you see that a lot in the episodes, but it's creepy how well that kind of fits in. Next up is Jimmy. Jimmy was the last child to enter the cul-de-sac, and he was born in the early 1990s, and was diagnosed with leukemia. He never associated with the other children in the cul-de-sac when he was alive because, and you see this in the episodes, his parents, he's always associating himself that he's a very frail individual, that like the slightest thing will break him, and that, anything could just cut his life short. So sadly, he was bedridden, during his, the rest of his life, because his parents were just like, nope, you can't go out, you're too frail, if you're around other kids, they'll break you, you'll die. But sadly, after fighting the battle with leukemia, Jimmy did eventually succumb to his illness, and he then completed the cul-de-sac purgatory. So technically, these next three do not actually fit the cul-de-sac purgatory theory because they're part of a different neighborhood. But because I guess the neighborhoods in life were so close to one another, I'm assuming that's where these three come in. And yes, I am talking about the Kanker sisters. But truth be told, that's kind of how it was explained in one theory. Another theory is actually said that they are demons that were kind of sent to purgatory to torment the souls of the remaining children, you know, who just didn't cross over. The Cankers are, in fact, the only characters with normal colored tongues in the entire series, which would seem to indicate that they, you know, they're not dead and they might be something different. It is surprisingly that the Cankers are attracted to the Eds. However, one common guess is that they're the weakest-willed children of the cul-de-sac because they each symbolize a different deadly sin. Evidence kind of pointing to this all is that, you know, all the kids have different colored tongues, truthfully. I want to say that most of them have purple or blue color tongues. I know with the jawbreakers, sometimes they're different, but that, you know, your tongues do change colors, body changes colors after you pass away. And if you really think about it, there's no adults, ever. You never see the parents, you never see the older brothers, you never see, you know, any siblings aside from, you know, Ed and Sarah are the only ones that are part of the cul-de-sac, and then you have the Canker sisters. There is another theory, actually, that the Canker sisters were, you know, from a different neighborhood that was close, that was kind of connected through that alleyway that the kids like to play in, and that the Canker sisters actually died in a horrible gas explosion in their trailer park. As creepy as that, you know, sounds, it could make some sense. Also, I mean, until way later in the series, summer was endless. There was no school. That didn't actually come until, I want to say, closer to the end of the series run. And you literally only see the same, like, 3 to 4 places in the entire series. You see the, you know, cul-de-sac, which is all the kids' houses. You see the jawbreaker shop, or at least the road that it's on, the alleyway where they spend most of their time, and you see the Canker's trailer park. Other than that, there's really no distinguishing. Like, they're not going anywhere. There's never a trip somewhere. There's never, oh, they're going to the mountains, they're going to the beach. There's none of that. It just doesn't exist. Honestly, I haven't seen anywhere that the writers or anything like that or producers have even kind of acknowledged these theories, unlike the Rugrats theory. So, I mean, I guess it's just kind of fun to, you know, speculate and think about all these kind of things. I mean, some of it sounds like really, really gruesome. There was also a theory about Naz that she actually died because she's very competitive, and that she died in the same lake that Eddie actually died in, by jumping in and holding her breath and losing a I can hold my breath longer than you contest. That was another theory, a way less darker theory. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of messed up to think about it, but could it be true? Maybe. Does it kind of line up? Possibly. I want to go back to Rolf for a minute. You know, he always talks about, you know, his family, this big family, and he's always saying they're calling for him, and you see him yelling, but you don't ever hear anybody actually yelling for him. You don't even hear like a Charlie Brown, wah, 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 wah. You don't hear it. There's nothing. So who is he yelling at? Who's he trying to talk to? Just kind of taking a step back a bit, I have been on the search of rewatching a lot of these older episodes just to kind of, you know, get my bearings and things like that, and it's kind of difficult to find them, not gonna lie. But I mean, I don't know. I remember watching the show when it first came on, and I don't know why I liked it. I don't know if it was just because of the amount, like, every kid wanted to shove a ginormous jawbreaker in their mouth as a kid, and yet these guys could. And I don't know if that was, like, part of the whole, like, oh, yeah. or if it was just like, oh, it's on, I'm watching Cartoon Network and I'm too lazy to get the remote and change it. But I don't know, it became a staple of my childhood. And, you know, so was Courage, so was Dexter, Cow and Chicken, even though that was so off the wall disturbing. And looking back at that now, I'm like, wow, how was that allowed to be aired? But, you know, Powerpuff Girls, all of these shows from the late 90s, early to mid 2000s, they all have some type of fan theory, which is exactly what all these conspiracy theories are. They're just fan theories. They're stories that were made up by fans that were like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if it was like this? Or, hey, what about this? Do you think this could be a possibility? Could this explain some of what's going on? It makes sense, but it also is just like, oh, okay, well, wait a minute here. If this happened, well, what about this? Truth be told, I think it's kind of cool that people's minds go into these creative ways of thinking. Does it kind of creep me out that some people are like, yeah, let's just talk about murdering a whole bunch of children? Yeah, maybe just a little bit creepy, but no creepier than it actually happening out in real life. So I want to say that is all for this episode. Moving forward, I'm going to have kind of like a time schedule of when certain episodes are airing. I know the podcast has been a little slightly all over the place. So moving forward, probably on Mondays, we'll be releasing at least one conspiracy theory video. That we're going to try, I'm going to try to get some like previews on our IGTV and on Facebook. Also, Mondays is going to be when the conspiracy theory releases on the podcast. And like I said, right now I'm working mostly on a lot of the childhood cartoons that we grew up with. Are we going to hit some other ones later? Yes, 100%. Also, on Wednesdays, I'm going to be doing the murder in history, and it'll be whatever big type murder or anything like that that's happened in the past. I'll be doing it on Wednesdays for that week, and probably on Fridays, we'll be doing something along the lines of either like a Q&A, going over a hot topic that people have found on our Instagram that, you know, just people want to know a little bit more information about, and, or, you know, an update on a current case, as in like the Doomsday Couple case, or like the case about the recently the TikTok star and the teenager that were just killed in the movie theater, you know, rest their souls. So that's kind of what we'll be looking at over the next, you know, couple weeks is kind of like a startup. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and give us a follow. Also on Instagram at the Spooky Barber Babes. And we'll see you next time.